Welcome, everyone, to our weekly study group. This is Corinne Zupko. I'm very happy you are here. And let's do as we usually do and just take a few moments in silence together to come to that quiet, still place in our minds, that place that we all share. If we notice that particular thoughts keep popping up into our mind, simply noticing them and shifting our awareness back to the quiet, still part of our mind where the Holy Spirit abides. This holy instant we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a word, a thought, or a tranquil, open mind, these are the gifts that the Holy Spirit will give. Placing the Holy Spirit in charge by our request. Taking another mindful deep breath in and out. And coming together to our perception of this time and place. So we are going to read from the Sparkle Edition, page. Actually, I'm noticing, does anybody else hear an echo?
I do.
Yeah, I did.
If anybody, actually, I don't hear it now, but if anybody is on speakerphone, that you still hear the echo?
Yeah.
If anybody's on speakerphone, that sometimes will do it. So if you could take yourself off speaker. I think somebody else has joined us, too. Anybody want to say hello?
Hi, everybody. It's Stacy.
Hi, Stacy. Welcome.
Thank you.
We are glad you are here. How is the echo still there, or has it gone away?
It doesn't really sound like an echo. It sounds like noise.
Oh, like noise. Okay. I guess if anybody has background noise, just a reminder that you can mute your line by pressing *6. And when you're ready to say something and unmute, you just press *6 again. And everything's sounding good to me at the moment, so I'm hoping.
I think it's stuck.
Okay, great. All right, so we're in the Sparkle Edition, page 78. The section is The Escape from Fear. And just a side note, we read only two paragraphs last week because we got into so much discussion. So what I'm going to do is just reread those two paragraphs, and then I'll read the third paragraph and pause from there just to refresh our memory. So Sparkle Edition, page 78, it's chapter 4, The Escape from Fear. In the original edition, it's also chapter 4. The section is also The Escape from Fear. It's paragraph 56. It's on page 67 if you have the book. And then in the Foundation for Inner Peace edition, which is going to be a bit different, it's page 62. The section is called This Need Not Be. So again, that's a little different. So I'll begin, like I said, just rereading the two paragraphs that we read last week. The Escape from Fear. If you cannot hear the voice of God, it is because you do not choose to listen. The fact that you do listen to the voice of your ego is demonstrated by your attitudes, your feelings, and your behavior. Your attitudes are obviously conflicted. Your feelings have a narrow range on the negative side, but are never purely joyous. And your behavior is either strained or unpredictable. Yet this is what you want. This is what you are fighting to keep and what you are vigilant to save. Your minds are filled with schemes to save the face of your egos, and you do not seek the face of God. The glass in which the ego seeks to see its face is dark indeed. How can it maintain the trick of its existence except with mirrors? But where you look to find yourself is up to you. We have said that you cannot change your mind by changing your behavior, but we have also said, and many times before, that you can change your mind. When your mood tells you that you have chosen wrongly, and this is so whenever you are not joyous, then know this need not be. In every case you have thought wrongly about some soul that God created and are perceiving images your ego makes in a darkened glass. Think honestly what you have thought that God would not have thought, and what you have not thought that God would have you think. Search sincerely for what you have done and left undone accordingly, and then change your minds to think with God's. This may seem hard to you, but it is much easier than trying to think against it. Your mind is one with God's. Denying this and thinking otherwise has held your ego together, but has literally split your mind. As a loving brother, I am deeply concerned with your mind and urge you to follow my example as you look at yourselves and at each other and see in both the glorious creations of the glorious Father. So I'll just pause there and see if anything came up for anybody as we were reading those paragraphs. I'll just add a comment where it says towards the last paragraph that we just read, change your mind to think with God's. This may seem hard to you, but it is much easier than trying to think against it. I feel like it does feel harder to think with God, to allow the Holy Spirit's thinking through us, because not only are we so accustomed to thinking with our ego, but like it said earlier in this reading, we want to keep thinking with our ego. We want it. It's that little part of our minds that is, you know, desiring that specialness that keeps it from seeming like it's an easy thing to do, to think with God. And it goes on to say, your mind is one with God's, but we have denied this, and that's held our ego together, but it has literally split your mind. So this is the teaching in the Course, where this is teaching, it's not in the level of form. It's talking more in the formless level, where there's part of our mind that has not left God, and there's the part of our mind that is seemingly split off from our mind. So this is where the Course is teaching, that we have a split mind, and it's that split off part of our mind that we are learning how to heal. And the thing that occurred to me a while back was that it's not teaching that we all individually have a split mind. There is one split mind. We are mm-hmm. all of that one split off mind, and that split piece of mind kept fragmenting itself into further and further, you know, pieces. So that's why we experience ourselves and perceive ourselves as separate from one another. But it's ultimately that one split that we are healing. So that's one of the deeper, more abstract teachings of the Course. Mm-hmm. Anybody have any thoughts or anything to add? I also really like how it says, as a loving brother, I am deeply concerned with your mind and urge you to follow my example as you look at yourselves and at each other and see in both the glorious creations of the glorious Father. I forget where I read this, if it was in, I don't even know where I read this, but I know I heard this somewhere, that Jesus, through the Course, is saying, like, take him as an example of how to think. He's just an example of you know, right-minded thinking and a good example at the type of thinking that we are learning how to do by following the Holy Spirit's guidance, and that anything that he was capable of, we are completely capable of as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty cool.
I have a question.
How
do you know when, if you're trying to think more like Jesus and trying to be more, I don't know how to say this, I guess, non-judgmental maybe,
mm-hmm.
you know, if
because I feel like if something is really ticking me off, it's probably mm-hmm. because I'm in my ego, and I recognize that, and then I mm-hmm. just take a couple of breaths, and I tell myself it is what it is, and this person is in, you know, their ego as well, and I say, like, a very quick, just forgive and move, you know, but then sometimes I think, well, how do I know when to say, this is not appropriate for you to mm-hmm. be talking to me like this or mm-hmm. for you to be behaving this way? Do you know what I mean? It's hard for me to know when to just let it go.
Right.
Like, as my mom says, let it lay where Jesus flung it. Or just to, like, to then be able to say, you know what, I don't think that this is appropriate. And
right.
I don't know if that, not that anybody has been abusive to me, but maybe just a comment that they'll make and I say, no, that's not appropriate to say. Mm-hmm. I don't appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like, is that my ego that's getting to, you know what I mean? So I guess I'm trying to.
That's an excellent, excellent question. And the first
sorry,
thing
my
that
dog
comes.
Bark.
What's
go
that?
Go ahead, sorry. I feel my dog. Go ahead.
Not a problem. That's a fantastic question. And, you know, in terms of how to think, like, I'll first say that, as you know, the Course is saying that we don't know how to think and we can't figure it out ourselves. What we're asked to do is ask and, you know, take that short little pause and say to the Holy Spirit, to our inner guide, you know, I don't know. I don't know how to even see this. Here you go.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the Course is very practical and recognizes that we're going to be in countless situations where we have to make, you know, decisions or, you know, say things right then and there. So there's a part in the Course that says, if a brother asks you to do something insane or, you know, I don't know if it uses the exact word insane, but if a brother asks you to do something, you know, that's just like, you're like, what, you know, why should I do this
mm-hmm.
for this person? It says, do it because it doesn't matter. Because if you resist it, it's making it real. If you go with it and, you know, insist on doing it your way, you know, it's definitely an ego thing. But it says later in the Course, if your brother asks you to do something insane, don't do it if it will hurt either one of you. So we have to be where we're at. And if we're perceiving something as hurtful, boundaries, I think, are part of, if we're in a place where we feel like we need to set a boundary, do it. I personally think that can be part of our evolution and our evolving, into, you know, wherever it is that we're growing to, whatever our particular path, our particular lessons are. I know for me, there was a person that I struggled with for years, and I very much believe that I only have the relationship that I have with this person now, which is more in line with feeling like a more satisfying and spiritual relationship, because I came to a point in the past where I had to set some boundaries and start to learn how to speak up for myself, because that wasn't something that I could do with them. It terrified me, you know, to be able to speak up and say no and find my voice in this particular situation. So we have to go through our lessons. We can't avoid them. And so, you know, the Course says don't ever do something if it's going to hurt you or hurt the other person. So in a case, you know, like right on the spot, I might say, even if it's an afterthought, or if it's really a really quick fleeting thought, like, Holy Spirit, you know, I'm inviting you in here. Like, I don't know what to do, and I'm willing to see this differently. But you know, I'm gonna do X, Y, and Z because that's just what feels right for now. So, is it all ego? Probably, but by taking it to the Holy Spirit, it's not going to stay there. It's you know, we're going to move through these situations and grow from them, if that makes sense.
Yes. Thank you.
Does anybody have anything to add to that? I think that's a really fantastic question.
This is Sonia. I'll say that I've had a kind of an opposite approach to my life, where if someone said something to me that I didn't like, I would, I mean, I'd probably give them, I would call it giving them a pass initially, but eventually I would say something if they kept on doing that behavior. But for me, I'm noticing that every time someone does something that would normally bring a very strong reaction inside of me where I had to respond, since I've been practicing the course, I'm not going to say it's brought a miraculous change, but I'm more likely to pause first and before I respond to them. And I've noticed that, like, when I pause in responding to them, because, you know, it's all depending on where you are and where your learning is. Like, for me, I don't have a problem speaking up for myself, so therefore sometimes the course is teaching me to, like, I always don't have to be in defense mode. Just the moments if I sit back and I, you know, ask the Holy Spirit to please help me, like, my feeling about the situation will dissolve, and I don't feel like I need to address it. And that's not to say that, you know, people should treat you disrespectfully or mean ways. But for me, my learning is about that. I've always been so defensive that I'm learning how to, you know, let my guard down and not always be like in like combat mode.
Right. Beautiful. And that's, I think that is a perfect example and speaks perfectly that, like, you know, our curriculums are all different. And so we're going to have to, you know, be learning in different ways. And I love how you said that you're finding that you're pausing first. And that's, for the longest time, it was always an afterthought. Like, oh, you know, I reacted in this situation. Okay, Holy Spirit, here you go. Like, I'm thinking about this after the fact. And slowly after studying the course for longer and longer, that pause, like you're saying, crept in during the situation or even before going into a situation that I knew would be challenging. So being able to have that pause and ask first is ultimately where the course is taking us.
And I found that even when I do get irritated or angry and I do say something to the person, my reaction is not as intense as it would have been.
Yeah. Another thing that I'll share too, Sonia, you spoke to this saying that, you know, you might not need to address something. That's a piece of this too, is that when we find, and I'll just speak from my own experience, that I went through a period of learning where I needed to speak up, I needed to set boundaries because that's exactly just what I needed to go through. But after a time, that only took me so far. Like then just staying there wasn't what I ultimately needed to come to. What I ultimately needed to come to was taking that other person and the reactions that I was having to the Holy Spirit in the moment. And so fast forward several years, this actually occurred over the summertime, and I know I've shared this example before on the call. I was sitting with this person on the phone, and they were doing their thing, blah, 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 talking to me, and I could easily be triggered, but what I chose to do was to just say to myself, the Holy Spirit is in this person, period. That doesn't mean they're going to do the right thing according to my judgment. That doesn't mean they're going to say the right thing according to my judgment. I just trust that the Holy Spirit is in them, and I didn't, instead of responding to them, I was taking my stuff, you know, rather than going left or right, I was going up. I was taking it to the Holy Spirit, and suddenly this person started saying, you know, when I make a good, come up with a good business thing, like I get a rush and I realize I have an ego. I never realized I had an ego before. And there I am sitting on the phone, like I cannot believe that this person is suddenly talking about their ego, which never in a million years have I heard them do this before. And so it was that, again, being open to another way, a better way, even from where I previously grew to, that took it to that level of not even needing to address my feelings with that person, just taking it to the Holy Spirit. And then the Holy Spirit started coming through the other person. It was really quite an amazing experience for me to witness, to see, you know what, the Holy Spirit really is there. It's no joke. So, very good. Anybody have anything else to add? All All right, I'll keep reading. So the next few paragraphs, I think I'll read a couple of them because they're rather short. When you are sad, know that this need not be. Depression always arises ultimately from a sense of being deprived of something you want and do not have. Know you are deprived of nothing except by your own decisions, and then decide otherwise. When you are anxious, know that all anxiety comes from the capriciousness of the ego and need not be. You can be as vigilant against the ego's dictates as for them. When you feel guilty, know that the ego has indeed violated the laws of God, but you have not. Leave the sins of the ego to me. That is what atonement is for. But until you change your mind about those your ego has hurt, the atonement cannot release you. As long as you feel guilty, your ego is in command, because only the ego can experience guilt. This need not be. So I will pause right there. So these paragraphs to me are just speaking that, like, no matter what, there's another way. Know that when we are depressed, anxious, guilty, you know, suffering, that this need not be. We have the opportunity, the decision within ourselves to make to choose once again, to choose for the Holy Spirit rather than for the ego. I'll share, too, that for me, just having struggled with the anxiety that I've struggled with in my life, that this particular sentence about, you know, when you are anxious, know that all anxiety comes from the capriciousness of the ego and need not be. I used to not get that because, for me, my personality is anything but capricious. I'm pretty predictable and, you know, reliable and not at all flighty or you know, capricious. And so what occurred to me, though, with asking the Holy Spirit to help me understand this better, was that this capriciousness goes deeper, that the mm-hmm. ego, the thought system of the ego, is built on a lie. So it's built on something that is just not stable. And so when something happens and we get that feeling of, like, our whole world being turned upside down, that's the capriciousness of the ego. It's not built on a stable foundation. And so anxiety of the ego comes from that, if that makes sense. And I'll just say, too, where it says, when you feel guilty, know that the ego has indeed violated the laws of God, but you have not. So there's a difference between you and the ego. Leave the sins of the ego to me. That is what atonement is for. If we're feeling any fear in our minds, that might sound fearful, but it's actually not. The Course also says that the ego has not done anything, and so it really hasn't violated any laws of God. But the sins of the ego, or the mistakes of the ego, are just what are left for the atonement, the undoing, the correction. That's what our part is, to bring those mistakes, those hidden beliefs out to the Holy Spirit. And I think, too, I'll speak for myself again, that guilt is, the Course goes really deep with guilt, but we can also experience a lot of guilt on the surface of our personality. And for me, it's always been really a relief to realize that when I am feeling guilty because I think I've done something bad, that guilt is from the ego. And so am I going to stay with the ego, or do I want to use the Holy Spirit's forgiveness? Do I want to allow the Holy Spirit to step in and experience that forgiveness? That has always been like a breath of fresh air to me, that we are not guilty.
I just have a question, just so that I can understand, since I'm new to studying the Course on a consistent basis. So I've been thinking lately that when it comes to guilt and anger, like, anytime something happens on the surface and you feel guilty, or anytime something happens on the surface and you feel angry, is that the guilt and the anger is just kind of I look at it like a symbol for the deeper unconscious guilt and anger that the split mind has regarding the separation, or that the split mind has about what we think we did when we separated from God.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know if I'm explaining it right, if you understand what I mean, because that's eventually, you know, since I've been reading, that's what I've been thinking, like, okay, you'll do something and you may judge it as being inappropriate or bad or whatever, and you say, oh, I feel guilty, but then I feel like the Course talks so much about guilt, and we know that the Course is not talking about surface guilt, it's talking about the guilt that we were holding for this perceived separation. So the guilt we feel on the surface is kind of just a slight outpicturing of the deeper guilt that we are all holding within us about this perceived split.
Absolutely. You said it perfectly.
Oh, okay. I just want to, because we was always talking about anger and guilt, and I just thought that maybe what we were feeling on the surface is just kind of like a pinprick of what lies deep because of our belief in the separation.
Yep, definitely. You got it. That's it. You said it very, very well. It is. It's exactly what you said. It's like a pinprick for what is deeper. It's a reflection of what's deeper. And so, you know, do we want to stop there at the surface, or do we want to really go? One of the things that I've been writing about lately is the difference between fixing something and healing something.
Mm-hmm.
So fixing something is staying at that surface level where, you know, I want to keep the dream going, but I want the picture to turn out just like I want it. So I don't want to, you know, go deeper than I have to. I just want things out there to turn out the way that I want them to, whereas healing something is about going to that deeper level of that guilt and that anger that the Course is saying that we all carry subconsciously, or unconsciously. And so as we heal that, then rather than look to the picture, you know, to tell us that we are okay, we're looking within and getting that knowing that we are okay. And then that is what we are then seeing, because that's coming from within us. So we want to heal rather than fix. Go on. I'm sorry.
No, so that brings up another question as you're talking. So when Jesus says in the Course that, so every time, let's say I get angry at, like, somebody, you know, stole my car, parked in my parking space, and they're there for like 5 hours, and I'm not without my parking space, and I get really angry or I get really frustrated about that. If I turn that over to the Holy Spirit and I say, you know, please help me to, you know, perceive differently because I'm out of God's peace, or whatever I say to myself, is that what? When you're doing that, you know, you're asking for the undoing and the healing of your perception. Is that when Jesus is saying, okay, so you're asking for that specific instance to be healed, and then, like, and it says, I don't know the exact wording, but you have no idea of the amount of time you're really saving in linear time by asking for the healing of that perception. Because, yeah, you're asking for healing on a surface issue that was brought up, anger and frustration, but the deeper anger or frustration that you feel based on this, you know, your perceived split from God, that's being healing over, you know, in a way that we can't really fathom because of time and space.
Yep. You got it. When you're willing to take, you know, whatever the surface situation is, and you know, hand it all over and be willing to have that different perception, not just about that situation, but just even in, I mean, it can just be about that situation or just in general, that that is, the Course does say too, that shortens, like you just said, it collapses time, in that we start healing that unconscious fear and guilt that we carry, and then don't necessarily have to go through the lessons that we might otherwise have needed to go through, because instead, you know, we're getting it more quickly. And that's kind of how we were talking about last week, about the Course kind of being like a faster track to forgiveness and to healing than other paths. And of course, every path is legitimate, but this one is just going to, you know, it's like forgiveness on speed.
Okay. Yeah, because when you first go into the Course, that is like such an abstract concept, you know, because, you know, like, you know, the Course, you know, Kenneth Wapnick, he says this, and David Hofmeister, he says this as well, that the Course is teaching on two levels. I mean, Kenneth Wapnick, he definitely says that the Course is teaching on two levels, and the more abstract level about space and time and the collapsing of time, you know, you don't really get that right away, but, you know, I'm glad that connected in my brain during this conversation.
Yeah, it is a nice connection when we finally get there, because that's when we start seeing, as we're reading the course, that's, at least in my experience again, when you start seeing new things on a sentence that you previously underlined, so you definitely read it before,
mm-hmm.
but now it's
mm-hmm.
like, oh, that's what that's talking about, because the course is teaching on those different levels. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, yep. Awesome. Okay, I'll read the next paragraph. Watch your mind for the temptations of the ego, and do not be deceived by it. Know it offers you nothing. When you have given up this voluntary dispiriting, you will see how your mind can focus and rise above fatigue and heal. Yet you are not sufficiently vigilant against the demands of the ego to disengage yourself. This need not be. I'll read the next paragraph as well. The habit of engaging with God and His creations is easily made if you actively refuse to let your mind slip away. The problem is not one of concentration. It is the belief that no one, including yourself, is worth consistent effort. Side with me consistently against this deception, and do not permit the shabby belief to pull you back. The disheartened are useless to themselves and to me, but only the ego can be disheartened. Have you really considered how many opportunities you have had, you have to gladden yourselves, and how many of them you have refused? There is no limit to the power of a son of God, but he himself can limit the expression of his power as much as he chooses. Okay. Anybody want to jump in? So it starts. Oh, did I hear anybody?
No, I was just going to say I really appreciate the line where it says the problem is not one of concentration. It is the belief that no one, including yourself, is worth consistent effort. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, for me, I've struggled with worth in general on the surface. And, of course, that's led to, you know, many perceived poor choices on my part. But it's like some people, and just for me, it's like I really, really wasn't ready to make the investment in myself to be consistent. And recently,
yeah.
since I've been studying the course, I've made an investment to be consistent with myself. I mean, of course, my ego always beats me up for not being consistent, but you know, I know that I'm consistently coming to the book every day, and I'm constantly looking at ways to, you know, really turn things over to the Holy Spirit. And if I don't catch it immediately, just to go back and not review whatever I've done wrong, supposedly, with guilt.
That's such a great way of putting it, because if you think about, you know, investing, the course being an investment in ourselves, but if you think about, you know, other things, like who do we usually take care of at the very, you know, the very last person in line? It's usually ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
we usually are taking care of other people first, or don't want to, you know,
mm-hmm.
maybe treat ourselves to that massage, or, you know, whatever it may be on a more, bodily level. But I feel like that's just a good word to think about, that particular sentence that you brought up, that we tend to not invest in ourselves. And it is an investment in ourselves to be consistent with this, and to learn, to be willing to become consistent. So that's a big one. That is a big one. Thank you for bringing that up.
You're welcome. I like what it's called, a shabby belief. That made me laugh. I was like, it is shabby.
Uh-huh. It totally is. That's great. I know for me, one of the first sentence actually that we read in that, the paragraph that is at the very, very bottom of 79, watch your mind for the temptations of the ego and do not be deceived by it. Know it offers you nothing. The temptations of the ego take so many different forms for us. Like we all have our hooks. I know I've shared before, for me, that my temptations of my ego, where it knows it can get me, is through, like, you know, feelings of or fears of bodily things being wrong, or anxiety, that kind of thing, whatever temptations of our ego. Maybe it's conflict, maybe it's feelings of loneliness or depression, sadness, whatever it may be. But those are all ego devices to keep us from looking deeper, because if, you know, things hurt, the ego knows that, that that's great evidence that it is, in fact, real. and yet, what is it offering us but nothing? I really like that sentence then when it goes on, when you've given up this voluntary dispiriting, you will see how your mind can focus and rise above fatigue and heal. And that's just such a nice image for me, rising above fatigue and healing. And so it is that vigilance that we are learning to develop, and that vigilance comes, like you were saying, Sonia, as we learn that we do want to invest in our true self with a capital S,
mm-hmm.
because that does make us happy. That's where that happiness comes from. I'll go ahead and read the next paragraph. Your mind and mine can unite in shining your ego away and releasing the strength of God into everything you think and will and do. Do not settle for anything less than this, and refuse to accept anything but this as your goal. Watch your minds carefully for any beliefs that hinder its accomplishment and step away from them. Judge how well you have done this by your own feelings, for this is the one right use of judgment. Judgment, like any other defense, can be used to attack or protect, to hurt or to heal. The ego should be brought to your judgment and found wanting there. Without your own allegiance, protection, and love, it cannot exist. Judge your ego truly, and you must withdraw allegiance, protection, and love from it. So that's where my mind goes to with that last sentence. Judge your ego truly, and you must withdraw allegiance, protection, and love from it. The ego knows that, and it knows that if we see it truly, we're going to withdraw our love from it, and that terrifies it. So that's where, you know, a lot of perhaps resistance to the Course can come up. That's where just, you know, a lot of the sort of, self-destructive sorts of tendencies. I was reading another part in the Course where it says, if you look deeply enough, which is what the Course is asking us to do, even below that fear that the ego seems to be conjuring up, if you go deeper than that, the foundation of what you're going to find is love. And that's the real thing that terrifies the ego, is that we're going to see through it, basically, that we're going to see that the love is beneath there. And that is what the ego is afraid of, because, again, once we touch that, we'll recognize that we don't need the ego. It doesn't do anything for us. So the first sentence, then, I really like how it says, your mind and mine can unite in shining your ego away and releasing the strength of God into everything you think and will and do. Refuse to accept anything but that as your goal. I think that's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Does anyone have any other sentences that have jumped out for you? Made you sort of stop and say,
I like, do not settle for anything less than this, and refuse to accept anything but this as your goal. I think, you know, since I've been studying the Course, I'm always amazed by, like, the simplest ways the ego can, like, hijack my thinking.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that you really have to be so vigilant, because if you're not, I mean, you'll be swept away in something that seems so innocent, but you're like, wait, that was my ego. And
right.
So, and that you, even if it's something really simple, but the ego has slid its way in for a very simple topic or something that doesn't seem that big, you still have to remain vigilant and know that it's still trying to take you off of your goal, which is to know
yeah.
the peace of God.
Yep. Beautiful. The Course says you are much too tolerant of mind wandering. And how true is that?
Yeah, absolutely. It really struck me. I was like, yes, oh my gosh. And sometimes I'll just say to myself, I'm like, mind wandering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good way of thinking about it. It's just sort of labeling what's happening and just kind of
mm-hmm.
being the observer and just sort of watching it. recognizing that wandering, that, you know, incessant chatter that we have in our minds is not us. That's not you. That's not me. We are something much greater than that. That's the part of our mind that is not true. I'll read the next paragraph. You are mirrors of truth in which God himself shines in perfect light. To the ego's dark glass, you need but say, I will not look there because I know these images are not true. Then let the Holy One shine on you in peace, knowing that this and only this must be. His mind shone on you in your creation and brought your mind into being. His mind still shines on you and must shine through you. Your ego cannot prevent him from shining on you, but it can prevent you from letting him shine through you. I think that last sentence is very, it's profound for me, just that our ego really can't change anything. It can't prevent spirit from shining on us, but all it can do is put up those blocks from letting that be shown through us. And it's learning that we are happy when we are getting out of the way and letting that shine come through. It also reminds me, I know I shared last week, we talked about a lot about the news and about some current events that were happening, and I mentioned that I knew somebody who was choosing to not watch.
Are you there?
Hello?
Hi.
Can you hear me? Okay, I lost, my power went out for a moment. It came right back on, though, so I am lucky to still be connected. All right, so you can still hear me,
everyone? Is everybody else here?
I'm on here.
Okay.
Okay.
We may have lost one other person, but okay, good. My phone suddenly went dead, and then I just pressed the button again real quick, and you all were still there, thank goodness. So I don't know where I got cut off, but I was just saying that I know somebody who's chosen to not watch the news and put instead their energy on just continuing to take their perceptions, to look to the Holy Spirit. So the sentence where it says, to the ego's dark glass, you need but say, I will not look there because I know these images are not true. That to me was a reflection or was a reminder of this person's choice to not be tuning into the news because they knew that for where they were at, that they instead wanted to deal with the current events a bit differently. So anybody else have anything to add? Actually, I'll keep reading so we can just finish this section before the end of the call. The first coming of Christ is just another name for the creation, for Christ is the Son of God. The second coming of Christ means nothing more than the end of the ego's rule over the part of the minds of men and the healing of the mind. I was created like you in the first, and I have called you to join with me in the second. If you will think over your lives, you will see how carefully the preparations were made. I am in charge of the second coming, and my judgment, which is used only for protection, cannot be wrong because it never attacks. Yours is so distorted that you believe I was mistaken in choosing you. I assure you this is a mistake of your egos. Do not mistake it for humility. I'll just pause again there and just add, and I believe I said this last week, that the first coming of Christ, how it says, is just another name for the creation, and the second coming of Christ is nothing more than the end of the ego's rule over our minds. And I think I said this last week, that just with all the, you know, end of the mind calendar, the whole 2012 apocalypse stuff, I think it's a great way of instead looking at it as, you know, it is a big shift in thinking and more people are turning towards healing their minds rather than continuing to let the ego rule. So the second coming is hopefully happening right now. We're living in an exciting time. I'll read the final two paragraphs and then we'll stop there and keep chatting. Your egos are trying to convince you that they are real and I am not, because if I am real, I am no more real than you are. That is knowledge, and I assure you that it is knowledge, means that Christ must come into your minds and heal them. Although I am not attacking your egos, I am working with your higher mind, whether you are asleep or awake, just as your ego does with your lower mind. I am your vigilance in this because you are too confused to recognize your own hope. I was not mistaken. Your minds will elect to join with mine, and together we are invincible. You will yet come together in my name, and your sanity will be restored. I raise the dead by knowing that life is an eternal attribute of everything that the living God created. Why do you believe it is harder for me to inspire the dispirited or to stabilize the unstable? I do not believe that there is an order of difficulty in miracles. You do. I have called and you will answer. I know that miracles are natural because they are expressions of love. My calling you is as natural as your answer and as inevitable. Beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that jumps out at me where it says, I am your vigilance in this because you are too confused to recognize your own hope. I think that's a great reminder where it says in the Course somewhere that as we falter, you know, the Holy Spirit Jesus is still there to be there for those times when we feel like we're not being vigilant. It goes back to the point, too, where we can easily beat ourselves up if we're not being vigilant, if we feel like, you know, mm-hmm. we're not doing the course right or, you know, we're not doing it enough or being consistent enough, that there's no mistakes. We're exactly where we need to be. And we don't have to trust in our own vigilance or in our own strength. All we need to trust in is that the Holy Spirit or Jesus, whichever, you know, whatever wording you're comfortable with, they're vigilant for us. We can, rather than put our trust in our own strength, all we have to do is put our trust in their strength. And by doing so, that, I think, relieves a lot of pressure.
Mm-hmm.
But it's putting faith where faith really belongs. It says in the Course, mm-hmm. If you're trusting in your own strength, you have every reason to be afraid and anxious and fearful. But if we're trusting in the strength of God, that's where our trust belongs. So I like that line where it says, I am your vigilance.
Yeah.
Nice little reminder.
I like that it says, I'm working with your higher mind, whether you're asleep or awake. See, that makes me feel like you said, it's not just dependent on my own efforts, which are, you know, inconsistent because you're battling the forces of the ego.
Right. Yeah. So that's even happening outside of our awareness. That I love that,
mm-hmm.
whether you're sleeping or you're waking, I'm working with your higher mind. So, and it's that higher part. Oh, go on.
Go ahead.
No, that's okay. I was just going to say. Oh, please
go ahead. I was just going to say one of my favorite things to do in the morning is when I wake up to just go back through my dreams and look for, I don't know, I just kind of like to go back through my dreams and see what I was dreaming. And
mm-hmm.
sometimes I find things, reoccurring images or reoccurring situations. And so I say, well, that there must be an importance in this. And I try to think about it, but I try not to think about it too much because I know that just forcing it. And then there are times too when I'm like, oh, I know there was something important I had to remember and I've completely forgotten it. And so
mm-hmm.
but it's reassuring, like you said, to know that it doesn't matter because it's, you know, my higher mind is still a part of it and still being worked on, and maybe in a month or two or years, I'll be like, oh, yeah, okay, that makes sense now. But, you know, at the time, I really do believe that that is, your dreams are one way that, I guess, the higher-ups and, you know, the universe or God or whomever is speaking to you is through many, many, many ways, but one is through dreams. And so I am so just infatuated with dreams and people's dreams and hearing about them. And I think I have a little bit of Carl Jung in me somewhere. I'm just like, oh, what does that mean? What do you think that means? So I enjoyed that sentence too. I'm glad that y'all read that sentence.
Yeah.
I enjoy dreams as well. I think they're fascinating.
Yeah.
They are.
They really are.
I just started reading Proof of Heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And because I know we've talked about it on this phone call. And the way he talks about time when he was in his coma and then in the other realm, and the way he talks about time, and then at one point he says it's almost like a dream and how there's no time sequence, you know, the linear sequence of your dreams. And so I imagine that is what it's like when you go into, you know, when we go to the next realm or wherever, that it is much like a dream where you can be in two places at one time, or you can, I don't know, I mean, if you can dream like that, then clearly there must be something there, so.
Right.
I'm kind of rambling, sorry.
No. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you very much. Sonia, were you going to add anything?
No, I was just going to piggyback off what she said, because I always laugh when she said, like, how you can be at two places at one time in a dream, or in the dream, how you know what you're thinking in the dream, and you know what everybody around you is thinking. And I was just thinking that's kind of like the one mind. Because in your dream, you know what everybody else – oh, okay, I'll speak for myself. In my dreams, I know what everybody else in the dream is thinking. And so I'm just like, okay.
It's just so fascinating how – and my mom was in, you know, it's like a book club. She was in a dream club.
Mm-hmm.
And they would get around and they would talk about the dreams they had. And, you know, she's always saying, Carmela, think bigger, think broader in your dreams, because I think I get to be very literal. And she's like, you know, I said, well, I met somebody and their name meant pedicure or something. And she said, so it's the washing of the feet, you know, not that you need to go get a pedicure, Carmela. Like, she's like, think about it in a broader sense, you know, you're taking care of your body. Something like. So I just am always like, oh, I don't know. I just love hearing people's dreams. And my husband says, I never remember my dreams, but you remember your dreams in such vivid detail. And I'm like, I'm positive you can train yourself to remember your dreams. Truly you can. So
I think so, too. And, you know, you're reminding me, you're making me think, too, of the Course quote where it says, your sleeping and your waking dreams have different forms, and that is all. So in a way, looking at our dreams when we're sleeping and realizing and seeing how it seems so real, and that, you know, whole worlds can come out of this sleeping dream, that is a sort of indication of the power of our minds dreaming our waking dream. So I like that quote in the Course too.
Well, I won't take up too much of anybody's time, but I'll just say quickly that when I first started studying the Course again, I had an interesting dream where I was dressed like I was going on a safari. Now, if anybody really knew me, they would know I don't dress like I wear khakis and light colors and safari hats. And I was on the floor looking at a map. And my another version of me was standing over me in my work clothes, which is usually like very dark, you know, professional type clothes. And I'm showing myself the map, and I'm saying, I want to go here. And myself in the dark clothes is saying, but look, wherever you want to go, that's not even on the map. What are you thinking? What are you talking about? I said, but I know. I kept on saying, the treasure I'm looking for is right here. But there, and my other self in the darker clothes is going, but that is not even on the map. You're just pointing to an empty space. And I kept on saying, but my treasure that I'm looking for, it's right there on this map, even though it's like no marking for it. And then I woke up, I felt like that was my ego and that was my spiritual self debating how I'm going off the map. I'm going into uncharted territory.
I
love
cool.
it.
That's awesome.
Love it.
Oh, wow. Well, we're at the top of the...
Oh, yeah, I guess we are, aren't we? Sorry.
We are, but go ahead. Do you want to add anything?
Well, I was just going to say, I feel like, I know Carolyn May says, take the word synchronicity out of your vocabulary, but I feel like synchronicity are in an essence of awake dream phenomena. I know they're not really phenomena because that's how the world is supposed to work. That's how we do that, you know. But I still get so excited when I see a synchronicity, even though I know, well, I've clearly put this out into the world that I want this to happen and come to me. But I still am like, oh, my gosh, it's so cool. This is so cool. And most of the people that usually are involved are like, what is going on? And I'm like, no, I have to tell you. I just feel like that is just how I, you know, think about dreams. And then you're connecting to the higher, to God, through synchronicities, through music, lyrics, through all that stuff is connection and messages and, oh, I just think it's so cool. Like, just living in this world like this is so stinking cool. I mean, I used to not live like this. I was very much in my ego. And now I'm just like, wow. So it's, I mean, it's just like, I can't get in. I want more. I want more of it. So.
Yeah. Yep. Those doors start opening, and it's like, wow, there really is a whole other world. And just opening up to that now, imagine, you know, as it keeps staying on this path, just the whole new world that will, the awareness of the whole new world that will come, you know, as we keep moving forward, as we keep growing. So it's pretty cool. And actually, I just wanted to add before we end that I'm going to be facilitating a discussion session on Proof of Heaven and A Course in Miracles. So anybody is invited to attend that. I don't have a date set yet. I'll let you know in one of the upcoming weeks, but I'm going to be doing it on ACIM Gather Radio.
Okay.
So it'll just be a time when, you know, if you've read the book and are a course student, if you haven't read the book and you just want to come, you know, hear some thoughts, I'm hoping to pull together a discussion about the parallels between Dr. Alexander's experience and A Course in Miracles, because I know a lot of connections were coming forward for me, and I'm sure they have for other people too. So I will announce that when the time gets set.
Oh, that sounds cool.
You
announce, let us know.
Do you announce that on the phone call?
I will definitely do that. I'll also post it on Miracle Share on the ACIM study group. Are you part of that, Carmela?
I am, but I probably won't be able to join the phone calls anymore because I have a weekly meeting with work on Wednesday nights now, and it goes to 9.
Gotcha.
So, which, you know, I'll be able to listen to the recordings, but I won't be able to be on the actual phone calls. So if I can check on that, the posting, like you said, but
okay, that sounds good.
So I'll be on this call next week, but then after that, I don't believe I'll be able to.
Okay. Well, we will miss you, and you will be with
us.
We'll miss
you.
We'll miss y'all too, because I really enjoyed it.
But I'll definitely. I should know by next week. So.
Okay. Good. Cool.
Very good. All right, everybody. Well, have a great week, and thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Corinne.
Thank you. Talk to you next week.
Okay, bye-bye.